better serve their communities and to deliver the benefits of a clean energy future, electric utilities are transforming, making the grid smart by harnessing the power of data. To make this happen, utilities must have secure, private, utility-grade broadband connectivity to carry and protect their critical data. At Anterix, we provide the private wireless broadband platform that enables grid modernization, advancing utilities both individually and collectively as they realize the scale benefits of a nationwide ecosystem of utility communication networks.
To learn more, visit anterix.com.
Thank you for meeting us at the intersection, where the worlds of energy and technology come together.
Thank you for meeting us at the intersection. For those of you that are listening for the very first time, welcome. And for our returning listeners, welcome back. I am DTC's President and CEO, Cheryl Riggs, and today I am joined by a very special guest, Mr. Francis Bradley. He is the President and CEO of the Canadian Electric Association. Francis started his career in public affairs and joined CEA as a manager of public affairs in 1986. He became involved in CEA's cybersecurity efforts during its Y2K initiative and has led its security efforts since 2000. Francis is also a frequent speaker on industry issues such as security, technology, industry transformation, and much, much more. He has been the CEO since 2014, where he is responsible for day-to-day operations, as well as CEA's strategic plan and annual business plan and moving the meter forward. But last but not least, I want to say this is almost a continuation of our conversation because I had the honor of appearing on his podcast, Flux Capacitor, in January 2021. And I am so happy to be here again and to continue our conversation. Also, I saw he was our keynote at UTC's Power Grid convention just last October, and he moved the audience to action in many ways. So let's hear what our very special guest, Mr. Francis Bradley, had to say. So Francis, thank you again for joining us. Is there anything else you'd like to share about yourself or even correct? Because I know there's a long list of achievements.
Well, first thing is since you and I last spoke, we rebranded. And so, yeah, we shortened it from Canadian Electricity Association to Electricity Canada.
I love it. Fantastic.
So after 130 plus years, yeah, we've shortened the name. And yeah, a couple of things to share about myself. I'm a former runner. Back when my knees and my hips were able to do it. I know you're probably in or around Washington D.C. That's definitely among the top five places. I used to love to run. That's one of the great things about the work that I've been able to do. I've been able to travel all around the world. And I've gotten to run in some really wonderful places, in Paris along the Seine and, in Central Park in New York. But the mall in Washington, D.C. is definitely up there on the top ones. Something else, we didn't chat about this last time, but I'm an amateur photographer and I shoot on film in black and white. I have a bunch of old classic cameras from the 1950s, 1960s. I guess probably my newest camera would have been a 1980s era camera, but most of the stuff I shoot on is from, 50, 60 years ago.
Absolutely fantastic. I tell you, there's a saying that my father used to say, the wonders never cease to amaze me. I mean, my goodness, a runner, photographer, I hope that we get a chance. Maybe you can send some of your work and we could post it on our website because we're turning 75 and we've been celebrating some history and great things that our members do and other champions like yourself. So that is fantastic. And we will share that about Washington, D.C. and the monument being a great place because we have a lot of members. They're running. When we went to Canada and Power Grid, they absolutely loved that spot up the street from the hotel. And I'm sure you know where I'm talking about.
Yeah. Mount Royal. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely love it.
Wonderful place to run. Yeah. And yeah. And for photos, I actually, that's, you talked about podcasting. I also blog. I blog about photography, black and white photography. And my blog is at photobradley.ca. So there you go. In addition to my podcast, which is the fluxcapacitor.ca, my photos are at photobradley.ca.
I'm telling you, that's good. And I'm going to check it out definitely after this, because that is going to be fantastic. So it has been, and let me make sure, so it's Electricity Canada now, correct?
It's now Electricity Canada. Don't worry, everybody forgets and gets it wrong.
No,
I still call Chrysler still. I call Chrysler instead of Stellantis. I haven't exactly clued in yet, so the name will eventually stick. But yeah, it's Electricity
it
Canada.
It is very catchy. But for almost 36 years with Canadian Electricity CEA or Electricity Canada, what has been the biggest change you've seen, and what have you been surprised has stayed the same? That's a pretty, I'm excited to hear about that.
Yeah, well, I think probably, what's been the biggest change, both at the association, but also with the sector itself, is how the diversity has changed so much in 36 years. When I first started here at the association and in the sector, the people that worked in the sector, and also the people that looked that worked in the association did not look like society at large. You know, it really was a very specific subset, tended to be people who were in engineering. I used to make the joke, even when I started, I would always be the youngest person in the room. And it was invariably older, principally white, and there was almost all men. And that's been a big change. Increasingly when I'm visiting my members, and when I'm spending time at association events, I'm more struck by how the sector now looks more like society. It looks more like the communities within which we operate, which was not something that was, really striking when I started at the time, because you just wasn't thinking about it. But, now when I look back, I realize what a kind of a club, a small, tight-knit club it was 3 decades ago, and how, it really does look a lot more like the communities within which the companies operate. I mean, that's the biggest change. In terms of what surprised me the most, I'd have to say it's how the sector comes together whenever there's a significant stressor. So, when we've got like a major weather event, or, one of our members is facing some crisis or some problem, the way the sector pulls together, the fact that mutual assistance is seemingly baked into the DNA of the sector, unlike any other sector that I can think of. The knee-jerk reaction of most people in the electricity sector when something bad happens somewhere else, the knee-jerk reaction is, okay, what is it that we can do to help? And I've been watching this up close the last couple of months, specifically with respect to Ukraine. And seeing my members, and I know, you're seeing this as well, but, seeing the sector step up and see what we can do to provide spare equipment, what we can do to provide transformers, what we can do to provide expertise to help out. It's really interesting. And that's really surprised me, the degree to which this mutual assistance seems to be baked in at kind of like a molecular level for people who are in the sector. I found it surprising originally. And it stays with me even today, every time another major event happens.
I find that fascinating, your response, because I have to agree with you. But I love what you said at the end of the day, the way you phrased it about the community. It looks like the community.
Yeah.
That's perfect, because that's really the key. And it's good that it looks like the community, because to the second part of your answer, that they come together.
Yeah.
They're there. You know, they got a saying, many of our members, they're the first in, last out.
Yeah.
So they come together for the community. And like you said, it's not a club. And actually, it's what our members are doing is so critical. It's so, for me, it's refreshing to know that more people can know about the great work that's being done. They can be involved in the evolution, the technology, the growth, and actually we can come up with better solutions. So that was, to me, and hopefully to our even listeners, if someone has never listened or know anything about to hear that, yes, this energy sector, there's room for everybody.
Yeah.
It's not just engineers. It's not just a certain group. It's for everybody. There's some way to contribute. And I find that fantastic. I already told you I was going to steal one thing from you, but I think I'm going to have to steal that because it looks like our community. It looks like the community. And I love that. That was fantastic. Yeah. So, but as Vice President of Public Affairs, you're responsible for, among other things, the U.S. Affairs Department. Mm-hmm. Talk to our listeners about why it is important about the energy grid in international terms and why organizations like ours need to work together, because you talked about collaboration, to address the industry's opportunities and challenges.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting, you know, sort of step back, and it may seem a little odd at first to folks that we would have like a U.S. affairs group. But, you know, when you look from a North American perspective at the electricity sector, our grids are interconnected to a very great extent. We've got 30, you know, three dozen interconnections across the border, and so there's a lot of very tight integration between the regions. But you know, Canada makes up, you know, 1/8 of the bulk power system in North America, and so, you know, the importance and criticality of those relationships are such that we spend a lot of time thinking about how we're ensuring that we're managing those relationships and managing those partnerships particularly well, and ensuring that we address how to continually improve the relationships that we have between Canadian and American entities across the border. You know, it's all about ensuring reliability for the end customer. You know, the importance of those integrated grids for reliability, for security. You know, for benefits with respect to the environment as well. You know, when we see significant amounts of trade going back and forth across the border, they tend to be offsetting GHG emitting electricity sources, right? And so there's, you know, there's financial benefits for keeping costs down in larger markets. There are benefits with respect to reliability. There's benefits with respect to the environment, and that's only going to increase as we head into the future, particularly when looking at what is that future cleaner North American grid going to look like? And how is it going to evolve? And, you know, I look at sort of as a microcosm, the Manitoba-Minnesota relationship, and we now have a tie line between those two regions. And what that interconnection is doing is, surprisingly, it's unlocking wind in the Midwest. Right, because now they've got the ability to interconnect to a larger grid that includes essentially storage mm-hmm. in the massive hydro reservoirs in the north. So we've got, you know, hundreds, thousands of kilometers away, reservoirs that are able to back the development of more wind in the Dakotas because of that line. And I think that's what the future increasingly is going to look like. You know, if we look at a net zero future mm-hmm. that's going to require like an all of the above approach to electricity generation. Like some of that stuff is going to be things like offshore wind. How are we going to back that offshore wind? Well, we're probably going to back that offshore wind with larger grids, greater interconnection, and probably using, for example, Canadian hydro reservoirs to actually be the backing to the wind. And so there's a really great complementarity between the two. We've seen it in a bit of a microcosm between Manitoba and Minnesota, but I think that's what we're going to see on the East Coast, on the West Coast. You know, as we head into that you know, net zero future, it's going to be increasingly critical, that relationship between the two.
I agree with you, and I kind of just want to ask this question because I know in your role you see the overarching connection. Do you find, even with talking with your members, that there's still some knowledge sharing to make sure that everybody kind of sees this connection so that the collaboration can be, you know, agreeable? Because if everyone, all the players are not really interested in playing the game, then we have some obstacles, and that talks to some of the challenges. So do you look at that as a challenge as far as making, you know, in your role, making sure that everyone sees the bigger picture, or at least is willing to talk about the bigger picture?
And yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I spend a fair amount of time, for example, in Washington, talking to folks in the government. I'll be there, you know, next week for the same purpose. And a lot of it has to do with precisely that, making sure there's an understanding of that relationship and appreciation for that relationship. You're not going to be able to convince, you know, everybody of the benefits of this. And, you know, we've seen challenges on a regional basis. The reality is trying to cite linear infrastructure, it's just hard, you know.
Yeah.
Like transmission lines, or you know, or pipelines, or highways, or any large linear infrastructure. It's hard to cite, but it's going to be important and critical that we do so in the future. And so, yeah, making sure that there's an understanding of the sort of symbiotic relationship that we have and the importance of it. You know, New York, I've mentioned, is a place mm-hmm. that I travel to with some frequency. You know, New York draws probably on most days about 1/8 of its power from Canada.
Right.
And, right. you know, that's actually a pretty important piece of the puzzle. You know, as you know, you have to actually exactly match supply and demand to keep yes. the grid stable. And so we're not talking about like a 1% or a 2% here. You know, we're talking in some of those border regions and border states that there is, you know, there's a pretty significant integration of Canadian electricity. And at the same time, in some Canadian grids, it goes both ways. So depending upon the time of day, we're drawing on resources in neighboring U.S. markets. And so just to have a greater understanding of how important that symbiotic relationship is to both partners is going to be important. And it's only going to increase in importance as we head into a decarbonized future.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And speaking of that importance, you sit on the steering committee for the Electricity Subsector Coordinating Council, the ESCC.
Yeah.
Very important. So one of your focuses during your time as CEA has been security. We mentioned that, which is yep. also at this particular time critical. What is your organization doing to encourage members to connect the dots between cybersecurity and the transformation of our industry as it becomes more reliant on technology and we all become more susceptible to hacking? And also talk about the ESCC, because that is another key area that you're involved in.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And it's cybersecurity, but it's also increasingly physical security.
Yes.
And you know, one of the interesting things is we're seeing a real convergence of the two as well. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, most physical security safeguards today are incredibly reliant on cyber right. to be able to yeah. operate, right? And so, yeah, the two of them come together. Yeah, so, you know, you mentioned it, in the intro that I was involved in Y2K. I know for probably a lot of your listeners, that's so far in the distant past, but it was the beginning of our focus on cyber issues. It really was the start. And so for 25 years now, you know, we've been working on cybersecurity issues. For 25 years, we've been running a security program here at Electricity Canada that really has become a bit of a sort of a center of excellence with respect to security, cybersecurity and physical security. I'm also a co-chair of a federal run national cross-sector forum. So I co-chair that with the Deputy Minister of Public Safety in Canada. And I've been doing that for several years, simply because we began addressing cybersecurity so long ago and have developed a pretty significant expertise in this area. We've been also assisting other sectors along their journey along the cybersecurity path. And so, you know, we've developed through our security programs, this approach to cyber issues and to physical issues as well, where whatever the issue may be, there's sort of these steps that we go through. We survey what the practices are. We try and identify what the overall best practices are. We develop in some cases best practice guidelines, and we feed that into what we think would make a appropriate standards. So, you know, through NERC and NERC's cyber security standards, CIP standards. We've got a lot of Canadian input into that because we're looking at these all of the time. And at the same time, we've been focusing as well on what are appropriate policy responses and federal policy responses. So I noted I co-chair the National Cross Sector Forum, but, you know, we've been making sure that our views are known as we've seen different pieces of legislation move forward. I've appeared before numerous parliamentary committees looking at different pieces of legislation. Some of those pieces of legislation, some of those laws have come into force. And so we've been inputting into the policy framework around cybersecurity for many years. And, you know, with respect to the Electricity Subsector Coordinating Council, it's been, I think, a really terrific forum. It's been particularly helpful in terms of ensuring that we've got really good integration of where government needs to go and where the electricity sector needs to go, and ensuring that we're all on the same page as we move forward. And the criticality of ensuring that we're addressing cyber appropriately is only going to increase. If we're heading into a decarbonized future, we're going to move from a world where electricity today provides, depending upon where you are, you know, 20-odd% of end use energy demand, to a future where it'll be 60 or 70%. So the importance of ensuring reliability, the foundation to that being good security and good cybersecurity, is only going to increase in importance exponentially.
Absolutely. I mean, as you were talking, I just couldn't help but think how this is just going to have to be another continuation for UTC and CEA, or Electricity Canada, because, yeah, I mean, this is everyone that those issues, those very issues you're talking about, they're critical for our members, they're critical for our organizations. So I don't want to put you on the spot, but I definitely offline, I'm going to ask you for a couple of invitations or extend a couple of invitations to you, sure, because we need to share a lot of this valuable information and teaching your expertise to our members. And thankfully, we have someone who has joined our team who has really a good, strong focus in cybersecurity coming from NERC. So I think this will be a great time for us to possibly work together on that. Yeah. It's so much to talk about. But another part of security, you talked a little bit about, well, you talked a lot about, but making sure the grid is secure during a natural disaster.
Yeah.
Tell us, you know, just a little bit, you know, I know you do a lot of that work on the ESCC, but just tell us, why is it important to provide a bridge between the federal government and the industry?
Well, natural disasters. Boy, your timing couldn't have been better to want to talk about natural disasters. I don't know if you were following the news, but we had a pretty severe late winter ice storm here in Eastern Canada last week. I was among the millions of customers that were in the dark. So yeah, I'm very cognizant of the criticality and the importance of this. But, you know, whether it's an ice storm or, you know, any other kind of significant event, the ability, and I mentioned that a couple of minutes ago, the importance of ensuring that we have the industry and government working together is absolutely critical. You know, we've seen when we're at cross purposes, again, I'm dating myself, but, you know, looking back to the 2003 blackout, where we had some politicians, you know, suggesting that, well, immediately saying, well, it's terrorism, or it's something that Canadians have done and it has nothing to do with us. And, you know, the ability to actually ensure that industry and government first off are on the same page is vitally important. I mentioned before the criticality of continued electricity service is such and its importance and its criticality is only going to increase, that we are duty bound to ensure that we work together and ensure that we have unity of effort and that we have unity of our messaging and that we bring everybody together on this. And there's always in these sorts of situations a critical role that government has to play as well. Yes. Right. In the federal government, but also subnational governments, states and provinces, municipalities, regions, and so on. You know, and again, I'm reflecting back on the experience that we just had over the last couple of days here. And I live in Western Quebec. We had a number of fatalities. So these sorts of situations, whether it's a natural disaster or any other kind of an event, but particularly natural disasters, we're talking about issues of life and death here. And so we can't have anything other than getting everybody on the same page and all of us, moving in the same direction. The Electricity Subsector Coordinating Council has played such an important and critical role of ensuring that we've got that unity of effort and that we've got that unity of messaging. And the unity of effort has been terrific to see how it works and see the level of support amongst companies and the level of collaboration and coordination between the sector and the federal government. You know, I recall back during, one of this very significant hurricanes a number of years ago on an ESCC conference call, mm-hmm. where the president at the time, President Obama himself, got on one of those calls. Just to see if there was anything that the government could do. And in fact, there was a suggestion that maybe there was a role that the government could play. And the president indicated that he would do everything in his power to see that request was right. He did. Wow. And it was all about using the heavy lift capability that the Air Force has to move critical supplies around. And they did so. So, that was a very concrete example of an issue that got floated up through the ESCC that immediately got acted upon. And it probably saved lives.
Amazing. Amazing. Because I know when we met on the first time doing your podcast, I was relatively very new CEO. And here we are a couple of years later, and everything you're saying, it's like I drank from the same Kool-Aid. Because at first I did not say, it's not life-threatening, but now that's all I say, that it's life-threatening. It's that critical. Thank you for bringing that point forward, because to me, that ties it all together for anyone who has a thought that this is not significant, it's not worthwhile or, juicy or whatever the word is, it absolutely is because it's life-threatening. Mm-hmm. So life challenges. So what we have time for, one more question, like I said, and I'm very proud that I was on the podcast, your podcast, Flux Capacitor. We talked about the challenges and opportunities of operating an association during a pandemic. Mm-hmm. It seems that even seems so long ago, but interesting, we did. But we're hearing that COVID is in the rearview mirror. Last year was the first year we were able to get back in person, and thank you for coming. But do you see the pivots that we've had to make, like meeting and working virtually? Do you see that lasting long term? Or do you see any other pivots that we made that it's just for COVID? Or do you see it being more of a long term situation, even in dealing with security issues, even in dealing with some of the things that you have dealt with? Do you see any changes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I'll talk in a moment about how our operations and how we approach delivering services to our members has changed forever as a result of COVID. But first on the security side of things, we started off back in at the very beginning of of COVID in March 2020. Mm-hmm. And one of my concerns was our ability to continue to effectively exchange critical information and sensitive information about cybersecurity issues. Because we were so constrained previously that there were some things that we absolutely could only do when it was face-to-face. There was concerns about using virtual tools for some kinds of interaction and the exchange of some kinds of information. And we got over those things. And we figured out how to use virtual tools, and we figured out how to make the most of them to such a degree that one of my kids, good friends, I just heard the other day, is hired in a cybersecurity role, working in a SOC, a security operations center. And of course, my response to that news was, "Oh, where are you going to be based? You know, where's the SOC going to be? Are you going to be in Ottawa? Are you going to be in Toronto? Are you going to be in Montreal?" And he said, "No, I'm probably trying to decide whether it's going to be the basement or my home office." And I said, "No kidding." So, like, even SOCs have gone, to a certain extent, have gone virtual. Now, in terms of how we've approached delivering association services, I mean, that's been the one upside of COVID. Well, there's a couple of upsides, but like the one big upside of COVID from an association standpoint has been the ability and the understanding of how we can use virtual tools to interact. And now, as we've kind of moved from doing everything online to getting back in person, and now we're at the point where we're figuring out, for some things, actually that continues to be a really good tool, and it's a really good complement. So there's a lot of things that we used to insist that people would get on an airplane or get on a train and travel to in order to do, and if we can limit some of that, reduce the costs to members, make more efficient use of their time. And so things that are sort of one way, the delivery of training, the delivery, the one way delivery of information works really well in a virtual, on a virtual platform. Interaction, that's got to be face to face. And so, from an association, what we do is probably, a combination of both of those things, maybe, mm-hmm. something close to half and half, depending upon, what committee you're talking about. And so where we've gone is we've kind of moved half of our interaction back in person. But that's stuff that lends itself really well to virtual tools. We're keeping it on virtual tools because we can save time and money for our members. So I'd say roughly 50% of what we used to do face-to-face has gone virtual and will likely stay virtual as we head into the future. And what is that future going to look like? Well, nobody had even thought of using Zoom 5 years ago. And so I'm really curious about, 5 years from now, what is the technology that we're going to be using? Are we going to be using, more virtual reality for training? That could be really cool. I've seen some applications. I was at DistribuTech in January this year, and in a couple of the booths, I put on the headsets and did some VR tests. And I think there's some more technology coming our way that is going to enhance the way we work together. But again, that stuff on the virtual side, that I think that tends to be sort of the one-way delivery of information as opposed to the interaction. I don't think we're going to be interacting virtually. I know there's, I know people that go on to these different sites in the sort of the metaverse and yes, think that might be our future, but I don't think so. I think as humans, the interaction side of things, I think that's always going to be personal. You can only get so far on a Zoom call or a Teams call.
I agree with you. And I'm trying to be open because I tell people, I joke, I said I used to get on my kids all the time, or every phone call prior to COVID, they had to be FaceTime. And I was like, you have to have every call, it has to be FaceTime. And it's funny because now after COVID, like, I can't even imagine conference calls.
Yeah. Conference calls. What's that? Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
you know, because no, it's not the same as in person, but it definitely, it's better than a conference call. And you can, there's a lot of value, like you said, because you're able to save time, you're able to save cost for learning, for medicine. We saw it in every aspect of our life. So that technology, you're right. It is going to be interesting to watch it evolve. Hopefully you'll keep me up to date. Like I said, I want to talk to you about some more things we can do. But Francis, it has been fantastic catching up with you. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we close this episode?
There's nowhere else I would rather be right now. We are the government of Canada has set a 2050 target for our economy to be net zero. Set a target for the electricity system to be net zero by 2035. Electricity is going to be the way that we decarbonize the economy. We're in an inflection point right now with respect to the electricity sector. The importance and the criticality of electricity is going to increase massively in the future. And you know, as a result of that, I think we're we're heading into what I like to think will be a very, very bright future. We're heading into a cleaner, more sustainable future. And honestly, there's nowhere else I would rather be at this particular point in time. While we're at that inflection point, to be able to be part of this is absolutely fascinating. And it's invigorating. As I say, there's nowhere else I'd rather be right at this point in time.
I have to agree with you. Having more of a financial background, now being a part of the energy sector, like you said, it's wonderful. This is the time. Yeah. This is the time. And it is very special to be part of it. So I agree. There's no other place that I'd rather be as well. So well said. Thank you so much for taking the time to share with us and the audience. And I am just looking forward to the next time. And I'm sure it will be a next time. And thank you so much, Francis. Thank you. And hopefully also we'll see you soon as well.
Oh, thank you, Shale. Always a pleasure to chat. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for meeting us at the intersection. For more information about the Utilities Technology Council, visit utc.org.